This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast is sponsored by Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen, located only 30 seconds from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Pittodrie for free on match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round. And get fired in with our exclusive discount code. Head to the bar and quote ABZPOD for a £3 pint of Foster's, a £4 pint of Moretti or Dark Fruits, or £5 for a pint of Fierce or Adake. That's any day of the week, including match days. And if you're with the little ones and are looking for a spot of pre or post match lunch, remember, under 18s are welcome in the bar with an adult, so make a day of it at Siberia. Come on, you Reds.
Red slight of foot there. Bukashina!
Hello and welcome along to episode 166 of the ABZ Football Podcast. I'm Gary Scott. Joining me this week, as always, is Gavin J. Baxter. Gav, how the devil are you?
Much like everyone, roller coaster of emotions, mentally, physically spent, and sort of heartbroken, but with, in a weird way, more belief than ever.
Well, there we go. That's just what this damn club will do to you, doesn't it? On this week's show, we're going to reflect on Saturday's heartbreaking, gut-wrenching penalty shootout loss to Celtic in the Tenants Scottish Cup semi-final. We'll check in with the young team, the Quines, and our loanees in loan watch. Then after the break, we'll look ahead to our first post-split encounter as Motherwell head north on Saturday. But first, Aberdeen 3, Celtic 3 after extra time. Celtic winning 6-5 on penalties. Saturday, 20th of April, 2024 at Hampden Stadium in the Scottish Cup semi-final. One change to the starting lineup for Peter Leaven as Dante Povara stepped in for the suspended Graeme Shinnie with Angus McDonald taking the captain's armband. Slobodan Rubicic returned to the squad for the first time since our opening Scottish Cup tie at Clyde way back in January. Gav, for you, any surprises at all with the lineup that Peter Leaven went with?
No, I think Dante was the logical choice to replace Graeme Shinnie in the centre of midfield alongside Clarkson and Barron. Maybe a consideration given to Phillips, given he's played probably his best game for Aberdeen against Celtic in a role which he would have probably been trying to replicate in the semi-final. But, you know, Kelly Phillips has not played a lot of football lately. And Dante has shown himself to be a very dependable figure in big matches especially. And I guess maybe the only other talking point might have been if he'd had a temptation to bring Jensen back in to balance out centre-backs. But I think Angus is shown in time to be a more dependable defender, although obviously we see what happens with the first goal, that he's not immune to mistakes. But no, as far as the lineup goes, and was a surprise to Duke start, no, thought Duke would start instead of Hoylett, so yeah, pretty much what I expected.
Yeah, it was interesting though, 4-2-3-1, but with a tweak, because Leaven did deploy Duke on the right-hand side of the three as opposed to on the usual left-hand side, clearly feeling that he might get a little bit more joy out of Greg Taylor compared to Alistair Johnston. I think he probably wanted McGrath's work rate as well to work up against Alistair Johnston. It was probably what we're looking to do. And dream start for the Dons, Miowski latching onto what was a wonderful through ball by Leighton Clarkson. His effort nestling high in the Celtic net, his heart couldn't stop it from going in. Miowski's third goal in four visits to Hampden. I mean, as starts go, couldn't ask for much more, Gav.
Certainly not. I mean, in classic Aberdeen fashion, I see that we've got a goal up after 2 minutes, and my first thought is, oh, that's a bit early, isn't it? But no, I think I've said before, like when you play Rangers or Celtic in Glasgow, in reality, you need to score the first goal to give yourselves a chance at the game. How often do we see them go ahead and they have the nous, they know what it takes to manage the game and kill teams off before the game even gets going. So to be 1-0 up, give the players a massive boost, give the supporters a massive boost, give them that belief. But yeah, absolutely vital and great play from McGrath, then to Clarkson, doing what Leighton Clarkson can do. And yeah, absolutely no doubt about when Boyanovsky's in that position, he's going to bite the back of the net.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we really settled well into the game, I thought. A roost flap across the side. No, honestly, that happened. We looked comfortable. And then came that inevitable brain fart, this time coming in the form of Angus McDonald, dithering on the ball, turning his back on Kyogo, who robbed him of possession. His effort, in fairness, was stopped by a wonderful block by Stefan Gartenman, but Kuhn was on hand to slide into an empty net. Galling, to say the least, Gav, this one. I mean, just what was Angus McDonald thinking?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, against all the strikers in the league, especially, you know, Kyogo, he's fast and he's going to harry you, give you no time. He's obviously looked out to the left side, seen that there's no real option, and he's turning back to give the ball back to Roos, who can then do whatever he just wants to do with the ball. Angus is good enough with the ball to be able to just wrap his foot around. It's that moment where he rolls, you know, his foot over the ball, and that gives Kyogo that chance. And, you know, like I say, it's classic Aberdeen. It's classic playing the Old Firm, where Stefan Garten makes an amazing recovery challenge, but his block just lands straight to the feet of a Celtic player rather than going clear. Gut-wrenching, heartbreaking for the players. And that's the kind of moment where you think, like, okay, well, our luck's not in today. And this could now be, after an amazing start, could be a really long day at the office.
Yeah, and it goes, this is one of these scenarios, isn't it, where you touched on it there about, do you play Jensen just to balance the centre-half pairing out a little bit? I do think this is a goal that comes around because of the fact that McDonald's not left-footed. You could see, just as you watch the game and as you watch the build-up back again, if he was an actual left-footed player there, he gets the ball in from Garham and he can just look up and play a really simple curled ball with a left foot around to McKenzie, who has taken up quite an advanced position, but he just simply can't do that. And that's where you do see that weakness now with not having a natural left-sided player in the starting lineup at the moment.
Yeah, that's true. There is the option if he's got the left foot to play the ball forward or into Jack McKenzie perhaps, but still got the time to, like I say, just, you know, take a simple knock back to Kilroos, and this isn't a problem. But the tale of Aberdeen for the number of years we've been doing the show is get yourself into good positions and then just gifting the opposition a chance back in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Credit to us, though. I mean, that kind of goal, you know, would usually see Aberdeen sides crumble. But we got through it, started to play some good stuff again. We always looked like a threat in the Celtic defensive third. We were combative in midfield, and I thought we were really stopping any sort of major supply up to Kyogo and Co in that first half. I thought we played really well opening 45 minutes.
It was a real contrast into how we've played Celtic on a number of occasions the last couple of years. Even just, you know, those, it's the kind of the build up to the first goal. There's the through ball from Povar that leads to the kind of potential handball from Liam Scales. We're just, you know, players showing belief in the middle of the park to get their foot in the ball, showing what they can do rather than the aimless punts up to Miofsky or Duke or whoever it may be up front. It did seem like Peter Leven's message since he's come into being the caretaker, whether that was his first spell or post-Warnock, has been about instilling belief in these players. And I think Peter Leven deserves a lot of credit because we've seen managers with far more experience, far more credit in the bank as far as man management goes, not being able to get his players believing that they can go and compete, go and show what they can do against Celtic. So I think all the credit goes to Peter Leven and also then the players for executing his game plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Big appeals, you just touched on there, for a penalty kick from the Dons right in the stroke of halftime. Scales handling the ball after it was flicked up onto him by Miofsky, but VAR picture is clearly inconclusive as to whether the incident was actually inside or outside of the box. And in fairness, I'm going to let them away with this one. I don't think there was an obvious camera angle that could show whether it was or wasn't inside the box, and therefore I can understand why that can't be overturned on pitch. So nothing doing there. Halftime 1-1, maybe a little bit disappointingly after what had been a very encouraging opening 45 minutes. The second half, certainly the opening stages, the first probably 30-35 minutes of it was much more akin to, I guess, those kind of performances that we're more used to seeing from us at Hampden against both sides of Glasgow in particular. You know, much more passive. Celtic were, you know, really forcing us back, pinning us into our own half. And in fairness, some of that was due to that kind of relentless wave of pressure from Celtic as well. But we really struggled to get any sort of foothold in that second half. And then our resistance faltered just after the hour mark with James Forrest hobbling onto the pitch with his Zimmer frame, which I can't even now make that joke any longer because he's probably still younger than me, but never mind. Only just on as a sub. He'd already had one effort flash, I think. Was it saved or wide? I can't remember now off the top of my head. Just did exactly the same again. Drove at the defence before hitting a low curling effort that seemed to have absolutely no fucking pace on it. It bounced twice. Angus McDonald inexplicably pulls his leg away from it. And Kel Roos tumbles to the ground slower than, well, a slow thing. A shocker of a goal to lose this one.
Yeah, I mean, I was, I've obviously gone back and watched the extended highlights of this game. I wasn't able to be there. But on the radio, as I was making my way down to Glasgow, they were making it as if it was an absolute worldie from James Forrest that he's, you know, cut inside and wrapped his foot around it and scored the kind of goal that James Forrest annoyingly tends to score at Hampden against Aberdeen. Think back to a couple of occasions where he's done that. So when I saw the highlights and seen, like you say, it's a very, very tame effort. And it's not as though, like, as he wraps his foot around it, it starts outside the post and comes back in and Kilroos has got absolutely no chance. It's, yeah, very weak. And inexplicably, both Roos and McDonald, who are two of the most experienced members of our squad, neither of them take command of the situation. You know, McDonald can easily stick his foot in the way and clear the ball, or Roos can make the really firm shout that it's his.
I wonder if Roos has given McDonald a shout that it's his, because McDonald kind of almost pulls his leg away from the ball.
In part, I think that, but then when I watch Roos's kind of movement, it's as if he's surprised that the ball's gone past McDonald.
I know. It's the only reason it's the only reason in my head I can explain why McDonald seems to pull the leg away, is that he's had a shout from the keeper to say, keepers. But then, as you say, Roos looks like he's utterly astonished that it's come through to him. So I don't really understand what's going on here.
Yeah, on the slow motion like replay, it looks like it doesn't look like that. But in real time, there's this very obvious kind of almost glitch in the system. Which is when the ball goes past McDonald, where Roos like, then has to react. So I don't think he has made that shout. So yeah. What's going on there? I don't know. But again, soft goal to concede.
Yeah, soft as baby shite, that one, unfortunately. And again, in fairness, we did really well to ride out the storm that fall, because we could have easily fallen another goal behind straight off the back of this. Devlin coming off for Milne due to an injury that he'd suffered earlier in the game. Duke then off for Hoylett, Povara off for Sokler, as Peter Leaven kind of threw caution to the wind a little bit, but hey, it's a cup semi-final, so you're going to have to do this. We switched to 4-1-3-2 for the closing minutes, and the changes, you know, almost paid off instantly. Hoylett with two golden chances to equalise himself. First, after being put through by Miowski, his first touch was absolutely hopeless, forcing him wide, and had me having memories of Hayes and McLean from the 2017 Scottish Cup final all over again. And then a couple of minutes later, Clarkson's deep ball into the box, spilled by Hart, Hoylett prodding his finish inexplicably straight at Carter Vickers on the line. Let's be honest, who thought that was it? At that point, I'll put my hands up for that. Like, I thought that's your two chances, and they've gone a begging.
The first one, especially when Miowski plays them in, like, Hoylett's definitely got the technique to, on the first time, wrap his right foot round it and bend it past Joe Hart, as far as I'm concerned. The touch he takes, which takes him well wide, gives him no chance at all of really scoring, unless he does something a little bit out of this world. And also, the Celtic players by that point are also getting back on the line, so even then it's going to be difficult. I mean, it was better than Hayes and McLean, because the ball did actually at least make it to its intended target.
Okay, fair enough. But hey, not to be, Aberdeen rallying one final time, or so we thought. Hoylett picked out by Gartenman on the flank. By the way, what a pass that is by Stefan Gartenman, by the way, at that moment. Hoylett stood up Johnston before delivering a perfect cross to the back stick, where Esther Sokler was waiting to head home. Just his third Aberdeen goal to spark, as the kids would say, scenes in the Don's End as we headed for extra time. A great goal, a great Hampden moment for Aberdeen.
Yeah, I mean, all I could think about was being in that pub in Helsinki when Aberdeen fans gave Esther the perhaps unwarranted chant of Esther Sokler, the Aberdeen machine. Na, 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 na. And Esther's, I still think Esther's done well, but you know, obviously to find out he's only scored three goals was a little bit of a surprise. Although obviously it makes sense when you look back on it. Great cross from Junior Hoylett. Like you say, Stefan Garma stepping out like a prime Beckenbauer and playing that ball over there. And Hoylett, you know, attacking, I think it's Johnson that he attacks. Johnson, and yeah, it's a great ball. Takes
every
Celtic defender out of the game, takes Joe Hart out of the game. And Esther Sokler has got, you know, still a job to do. But a great goal, and almost hard to believe that we stuck at it, because how often do we play these teams away from home or at Hampden, which I can very rarely think of ever having the belief that we're going to get back into the game. I think back to the Scottish Cup final against Celtic and never really believing we're going to get the equaliser, Rangers in the Cup final earlier this season. So for some genuine quality, Junior Hoylett's been posted missing a little bit lately, ever since Neil Warnock probably left, but he came on, made a big contribution. And what I love about Esther Sokler is that for a guy who's from Slovenia, every time he scores a goal, it looks like it means the world to him. It's like, yeah, as if he grew up in the stands at Pittodrie. And yeah, majorly jealous of everyone that was in Hampden at the moment in a red shirt.
It was absolute pandemonium, bedlam. Great stuff, as you say, Gav, especially with the small level of support that was there on Saturday as well. A moment that will live long in the memory for everybody that was there. And let's just quickly talk about Esther Sokler really quickly before we talk about the rest of the game. I mean, Sokler's been probably a little bit unfortunate, I think, this season, the lack of game time he's had. And certainly, when he and Miowski have played together, they've looked genuinely threatening together. I'm surprised we've not seen more of them together. But I guess the big question is Sokler a slightly more rough and ready but replacement for Miowski next season, do you think? We've actually put some succession planning in play here that might just pay off.
Thankfully, that's a job for Jimmy Tallien to consider and to decide upon. I like Esther a lot for what he's done. I do think he, especially since Robson's left, he's become a more peripheral figure than I would have liked him to be. His game time has been very minimal. And when he first signed, we were obviously a lot better. There was a lot said that maybe he and Miowski were too similar to form a partnership. But, you know, Rangers at home, they did very well.
Yeah.
They do seem to have a bit of an understanding with one another. I remember thinking that it was a mistake to play him in the final against Rangers, but as an impact substitute off the pitch, because he's got, you know, good pace about him, better in the air than probably people would give him credit for. He's a real asset. Is he the ready-made?
Maybe not ready-made. I think ready-made's difficult.
Diamond in the rough of a Miowski kind of shape.
Yeah.
I think that's a big call to make.
I think it probably is. I mean, we're not going to find a ready-made replacement for Miowski anytime soon that we can afford, because Miowski is still, for my money, and there's probably an element of biasness here, but for my money, he's the best striker in the country. You could even see it yesterday in the second semi-final. Lawrence Shankland looked like a lost little boy playing in that game yesterday. Whereas Bojan Miowski continually steps up in big games. It's all very well scoring his diddy teams.
Lawrence Shankland looked like a lad who wants to be at the cup final in his blue shirt.
This is also true. Anyway, but still, despite the last minute drama, nearly time to throw it all away once again. Jack McKenzie with a game-saving block to the face to deny Adam Ida with the goal at his mercy in the 7th minute of added time. What a block that was, by the way. An absolute astonishing piece of defending by Jack McKenzie. Full-time 2-2, kind of cagey opening first period of extra time, which is not unusual in these types of circumstances, to be fair. Unfortunately for us, though, both Bill Miowski and Connor Barron, and I thought Connor Barron had a good game on Saturday as well. You could almost see that having somebody like Dani Povara alongside him, we'll talk about Dani Povara later on, really helped Barron just free up a little bit, I think, from having to play in that pivot role. It did mean, though, that Ryan Duncan and Shade and Morris entered the fray, and almost immediately Celtic took the lead again through O'Reilly, left with acres of space in the centre of the goal as the Aberdeen defence at that point looked absolutely dead on our feet. Into that second half of extra time and drama as Carter Vickers stamped down on Hoylett's ankle as the Canadian nipped in front of him. Don Robertson appearing initially to point for a penalty before then deciding to call for a foul on Johnston by Hoylett in the build-up. I mean, again, there's probably a level of biasness about this, although I'm trying my hardest not to be. A fucking shocker of a decision. And just once again, evidence that you're refereed to a different standard than especially the blue and green halves of Glasgow in these big games?
So what's happened here is that
Don Robertson shat it, is what's happened.
Don Robertson, from if I'm to follow his kind of logic or his way of thinking, has seen a foul by Junior Hoylett on Alistair Johnson.
Yeah.
Celtic being the attacking, the defending team, sorry, Aberdeen being the attacking team. And I thought, well, I'll see how this plays out before making a call on a free kick to the defending side. And in the following seconds, Cameron Carter-Vickers kicks Junior Hoylett as hard as he can with his, you know, extended leg, which I would dare say had been a foul, could be possibly fall into the category of endangering an opponent. But nevertheless, that happens. And then Don Robertson decides that we're going to call back to the initial foul.
Yeah, that appears to be.
Didn't really know that's how you refereed.
Yeah, I think a question I would love to ponder here is if when the ball dropped to, so let's say the foul take, let's say the supposed foul on Johnson takes place, right? And the ball falls to, I don't know, insert Celtic midfielder here in the position that Jack McKenzie was in. And he swings and hoofs the ball out for a throw-in level with the 18-yard line. So Aberdeen have got an attacking throw-in. Do you think Don Robertson blows for the foul on Hoylett and Johnson at that point? Don't think he does. I think he gives a throw-in to Aberdeen.
I can't make head nor tail of his decision-making here. It's because you watch it and he's in a great position to see everything that's happening in the box. And yeah, he sees the supposed foul and then just runs away, takes up a different position, and then the foul happens. And then he makes a call back to a foul 5 seconds earlier. Not to go full-blown Nottingham Forest on you, but I mean, I think we've raised some concerns with the SFA about the standard of officiating. And yeah, I'd love to have some kind of communication as to why he officiated these two moments like that.
What they will do now, and he has a cop-out, clearly, which is just going to say that he thinks that's a foul, and he's allowed the game to develop, see what happens, and he was allowing Aberdeen to have the opportunity, for example, to score, and then, you know, VAR maybe would have intervened at that point to say that there's been a foul in the build-up or whatever, or that's where they're going to try and go with it. But there's such a lag, like there's this whole idea about, oh, well, he should allow that to develop, see what happens, and when you look at the IFAB guidance about VAR, I think you're only really meant to do that if someone's about to score a goal, which Jack McKenzie's not about to do when the ball drops to his feet, because he's got, I think, four Celtic defenders between him and the goal. He's wide of goal. It's on his weaker foot initially when it comes in. Or if a player has a clear run into the penalty area, which again, Jack McKenzie doesn't have, because by the time he gets the ball under control, he's got two Celtic players facing him up. So there's no reason for him to have let that play out, even if that's what he was going to do. And you can look at the Hoylett on Johnston piece, and I think it's probably 50-50. Like, I don't think it's a foul. Now, there's probably an element of that because I'm an Aberdeen fan and I don't want it to be a foul. But Hoylett doesn't go up with his arms. His arms are by his side. He goes up to try and win a 50-50 header. Neither player gets to it. If Johnston does that to Hoylett in the box, is that a penalty kick?
No.
I don't think it probably is. And all I can come back to is Robertson didn't think it was a foul, and then he's seen the foul by Carter-Vickers on Hoylett and he's shat it because he doesn't want to have to give a penalty to Aberdeen in that circumstance. And I think it's as straightforward as that. And people can come away with whatever they want to come away with. I think that's what's happened.
Quite possibly. Well, the most likely situation is that. And it's just infuriating on so many levels that we can quite rightly feel cheated here. And, you know, there'll be zero repercussions.
Yeah.
Because they'll stand by their man and they'll say, like you say, that he'll been just letting the play develop and then see what happens, and then he can consult VAR if Aberdeen score a goal or whatever. But yeah, this is not how it works at the other end of the park.
No, absolutely not. I mean, ultimately, right, in the grand scheme of things, it kind of didn't matter because, thankfully, unbelievably, we go up the pitch and get a second equaliser at the death throes of the game. A carbon copy of the first one. Hoylett doing well once again to stand up Johnston before this time throwing in what was a really classy right foot cross into the back stick again. Angus McDonald's there, heads past Hart to send the Don's end into Moore. hashtag scenes. A great goal all round again. And redemption for McDonald after certainly the initial mistake early in the game, and potentially even you can look at the second goal as well. Just again, another fantastic moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm delighted that Angus got that moment, because I remember speaking to him for a little bit at the sponsors dinner last season, just a matter of maybe even the day before he signed his new 2-year deal with Aberdeen, and I could tell how much he wanted to be here. And, you know, he's had to bide his time. It's probably been quite a frustrating year for Angus McDonald. So for this game where, like you say, he's made a big mistake with the first goal, perhaps even a mistake with the second goal, while wearing the captain's armband, to come away with a moment like that, that's a moment that's got to be a standout moment in Angus McDonald's career. Yeah. And a standout moment for any Aberdeen fan that was in Hampden yesterday.
And top off, he had an excellent tackle on Ida as well late on. Just a fantastic tackle. I had to get the timing absolutely bang on. Did, despite the fact you'll have some moon howling Celtic fans try to tell you it was a tackle from behind and it should have been a penalty kick. Just great stuff. It was kind of funny, just the fact that we basically scored two absolutely identical goals against Celtic in that manner. It just makes you go, it's amazing what happens if you put the ball wide and just throw balls into the box in this league, isn't it? It'll never catch on.
Well, yeah, and especially when you're going back about a year from now, I would say that, you know, Liam Scales was a very good defender for Aberdeen, but he was definitely susceptible to
the
cross balls and sometimes positional awareness. And this is two times where I think Angus gives maybe like a little bit of a nudge just to create that separation. And then it's Junior Hoylett does all the work. Angus has got the simplest of tasks at this point, but fantastic goal. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I say, it was kind of justice, I think, for that penalty decision not going against us. I think it's unlikely that we win this game 4-3 if the penalty decision is given our way. So at least it's that weird thing. I don't want to say the penalty call doesn't matter because we equalise. Of course it matters, because it's just another example once again of the shit show that is Scottish FA refereeing. But I'm just glad that it ultimately, I don't think, didn't cost us. In this one, full time 3-3 after extra time. And at this point, I mean, it's probably fair to say as well that, again, putting to one side our fandom for Aberdeen Football Club, just an absolutely classic Scottish Cup semi-final.
Oh, yeah, 100%. A superb advert for the game. One other thing I would just like to comment on the equaliser in the 120th minute is I remember when we left the game at Pittodrie against Dundee, the 0-0 draw, and people kind of around me suggesting that the players have jacked it in, don't really give a shit anymore. The guys who they know that they'll be in the team no matter what. I think when that goal goes in, you see Slobodan Ribasic making a full-blown sprint to be part of the celebrations. Duke as well. And there's been a lot of conjecture about how happy he is to still be here or not. Miowski, you can see these guys. It means a lot to them. And I think when I talk about, obviously being disappointed how the game eventually plays out, but the pride in the players being there, it's because I could see that it felt like it meant as much to the players as it did to the supporters in this game.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's probably worth reflecting on as well before we talk about the penalty kicks that, I mean, we were really down to bare bones here for the shootout in terms of players you had available. You know, you've got the 11 that are left on the pitch are Roos, Milne, McDonald, Gartenman, Mackenzie, Phillips, Duncan, Morris, Sokler, Hoylett and McGrath. You know, players who you'd assume would be penalty takers, or who would be, you know, Miowski, you'd assume Duke would take one, you'd assume Clarkson would take one, maybe even Connor Barron from a technique perspective.
Yeah, Dante.
Dante Povara, possibly, yeah. And normally, because I hate when people talk about how the penalties are a lottery, because I don't think they are. I think the penalty shooters are not a lottery. I think a lot of it wasn't the preparation. But I think when you're down to bare bones like this, they maybe do become more of a lottery as a result.
I don't think it becomes a lottery. I think you're at a disadvantage with a squad like that. You're talking about some McGrath, an accomplished penalty taker. You'd like to think Sokler as a striker would have the confidence to step up. Perhaps Junior Hoylett's played in a lot of high pressure games being watched by many, many people. I think they would have the belief, but after that, you are talking about, you know, hopefully your experienced players stepping up, but how many of these guys have taken a penalty in competitive football? I would hazard to guess not too many.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, McGrath, McDonald, Sokler, Duncan, Hoylett all stepping up for the initial five kicks before young Jack Milne went forward first in sudden death. Duncan's miss was also somewhat overshadowed by the absolute nonsense and shit show that was Kel Roos leading up to it then, before Killian Phillips's effort was saved by Hart to send Celtic through. Let's just talk about Kel Roos a little bit. I don't want to sit and talk and point fingers too much at people after what was an incredible effort by the vast majority of people over that 120 minutes. But just, I know we joked in the run-up to this, I think ourselves in our own WhatsApp group chat about it, Magic was the penalty kicks and it's a Kel Roos redemption arc and he's been saving up all his penalty saves for the penalty shootout. Well, that didn't happen. Adam Eadas, he goes the wrong way. Surprise. Lewis Palma, he just fucking sits down at it. I'm not entirely sure what he's doing there. O'Reilly, he half-arsely goes the wrong way. Paul Bernard's one, he goes the right way and gets a hand on it, and he probably should have saved it. Like, he gets a big enough hand on it to stop that, and it's not right in the corner. Then there's the whole fucking injury shambles there. Can we talk about that for a minute? Like, what's he doing? I know he's got cramp, but I've had cramp. I could hobble off the pitch.
At the very least, you can roll off the pitch if you genuinely can't stand.
Yeah, just like...
I too have had cramp. I mean, probably... Obviously, I don't want to be too critical of him in this case because you don't know just exactly how much pain he was in.
Given
that he like was up in about a minute or two and seemed to be okay.
I kind of don't care how much pain he's in because he has to look up there and see that it's Ryan Duncan, a guy who's been turning out below average performances, and that's being exceptionally kind in recent weeks, who must have his confidence through the absolute floor, who's being asked to step up here to... in the biggest moment of his career so far, right? And you're just sitting on your arse, delaying the inevitable, letting Joe Hart try to shithouse. Like, it's just like, what the fuck are you doing? You fucking balloon. Get up and fucking hobble off to the side and then go down after Duncan puts his penalty away to put pressure on. I mean, is Emi Martinez doing this, right?
I believe we can hold any goalkeeper in the history of football to the same standard as Emi Martinez, shithousery in penalty kicks. I completely understand. I completely get what you're saying. I agree with it by and large. But I also, Kel Roos having cramp is the least of my concerns when it comes to his penalty shootout performance.
Let's go back to what happened again then. Joe Hart steps up to take a penalty. Roos is nowhere near it if it's on target. And then Iwata finishes things off and he goes the wrong way. So 6 out of 7, I think he went the wrong way on, which is kind of spectacular in a penalty shootout.
He goes the right way twice. Joe Hart and Paul Bernard.
Yeah, sorry, you're right. Yeah. But he's nowhere near the Hart one. Like, he's not saving the Hart one. And he should save the Bernard one. No.
You know what, I know it's kind of become my thing on this show and on online, but once you see it, you can't unsee it. And he is the least imposing 6'5", 6'6" goalkeeper that has possibly ever played the game.
Goes into the knee and you're like, what the fuck is that?
The problem is that, and with the way that a lot of modern penalty takers go about taking a penalty, it's all about the slow run up, giving the keeper the eyes and waiting for the keeper to move. And in that case, then there's always a reason why they all do it, because it's always very successful. But for me, I always think of Petr Cech when he faced Ronaldo in the Champions League final, and Ronaldo tried to do that, and Petr Cech just stayed completely still until the point that Ronaldo's now just got one step. And unless you've got an extremely powerful fucking traction engine of a right foot, you're not whipping the ball with any kind of pace. And that gives the keeper a much better chance. With Palma, that's the story. And he just makes Palma's mind up for him.
Yeah.
And it's the same with almost every penalty I've seen Kel Roos face up to. Nothing will ever be worse than his quote-unquote effort at saving the Pauk penalty. But when you think of penalty shootouts, you often think goalkeepers love them, because there's a chance to be a hero. And I never got the sense that Kel Roos believed that he was going to be someone we would talk about in the same way we talk about his, you know, compatriot all those years ago when he played Celtic.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we have a special moment just to talk about Joe Hart? What a monumental bellend that guy is.
I've got no doubt that him and John Terry are best mates.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of John Terry energy with him stepping up to take the fifth penalty.
Is it me, right? I thought at the time when that happened, I was obviously delighted he missed it. And at that point, I wanted us to win. But if he'd missed it when he could have won it for them, and then we'd gone on to win it, that would have been just fucking absolutely amazing scenes if that had happened. But I was thinking about it retrospectively, though. Is it just me? Or it's a Scottish Cup semi-final, for fuck's sake. Is that not like really highly disrespectful from a Celtic perspective towards us that they're putting up Joe Hart number 5 in a penalty shootout?
It's one of these things where because obviously he's not, you know, a shill of art. He's not got a track record of being the penalty taker at any club he's ever played at or anything like that. For me, the part that riled me and the part that maybe really want us to get this around Celtic and especially Joe Hart is when he misses it, he's smirking in the direction of his teammates on the halfway line and gives them a wee wink as if to be just like, ah, fuck, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We've got this. I would say so.
I think
and
it is.
It's I'm sure it was in a way ammunition, but you know, unfortunately we just didn't have the players to stick it to him. He's retired soon enough. We'll be past the Joe Hart stage and maybe they'll sign another Barkas.
All in all, like a desperately heartbreaking way to lose out, but a performance I think that certainly exceeded the vast majority of people's expectations, and I think a lesson, and I tweeted out at full time, a lesson to everyone connected with our club, and in particular I think for now the likes of Jimmy Tillin and co coming in, that's what the support expects when it comes to playing in Glasgow, whether at Hampden, whether at Ibrox, whether at Parkhead. You know, contrary to what Barry Robson was trying to say after our last visit to Hampden, I don't think that any Aberdeen fan expects us to go to Glasgow and dominate games. I think we're all realistic enough to recognise that budgets, etc., mean that games against those two are always huge challenges for us, especially in Glasgow. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't rise to that challenge. And I think if you put on a showing like we did on Saturday that was full of effort, full of dig, full of desire, and that you have a fucking go when you have an opportunity to do so, then you'll have the full backing of the support. And we're a much, I know it's so obvious to say, but we're a much stronger entity when we're all in it together, as you saw in the stands yesterday. This is not rocket science, is it?
No, certainly not. And even in defeat, because you'll sometimes, it's of course, we're saying this because we've drawn the game 3-3 and shown a lot of fight, shown a lot of character to come back, shown a lot of quality in the game. Because like sometimes I take issue with people saying, well, if you have a go, then people say, well done, no matter what. If you get cuffed 4-5, no, people are not going to say, well, they had a go. But on this occasion, it's all about simply having the belief, because we've all seen it. We all see the weaknesses that are in Celtic and we know that we can hurt them. And yet when it comes to playing in Glasgow, the game, I think Graham's talked about this before, this is a failure to understand why if we play a team at Pittodrie, like Rangers or Celtic, we'll go into a lot more belief. And then when we play them in Glasgow, it's like it's a completely different game. And our only option is to sit back and hope for the absolute best. This is a performance that people have taken so much pride in and so much belief from. And I truly do hope that we had a very, very keen, interested spectator in Sweden who saw a blueprint for how to tackle these teams when he makes his way to Aberdeen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like I say, that was the bit that really annoyed me the most out of Robson's comments after the League Cup final, because it smacked a little bit, like I said, of him seeming to think that we had this really unrealistic level of expectation, where I was like, the level of expectation simply here is to just, is to go and to have a go at beating these teams in their backyard and not being cowed and not be frightened of them. And when the opportunities present themselves on the pitch, you try to take them to them. You know, no, I don't think anyone expects us to go down there and dominate a game for 90 minutes these days. And I thought that performance, it's quite funny because it's made me reevaluate our squad all over again in a weird way, because I, I've flitted a lot this season between, is it a decent collection of individual players, but they're just struggling to gel as a group and as a team? Is it not? Is it just a couple of really good individuals and everyone else is kind of substandard? And I looked at that on Saturday and I thought, you know what? Tillian's maybe got something he can work with. I still think there's a lot of deadwood in the squad, clearly. Our strength and depth off the bench is not there. And we don't have enough options from a wide perspective. But now I'm like, maybe there's not the massive overhaul that we maybe thought in the summer that's needed for Tillian. Maybe there is more in that squad he can work with than we thought just a couple of weeks ago.
Been a long old season.
It has, hasn't it?
Yeah, he will. Jimmy Tillian, his assistants will have been watching this and taking a lot from it, both just in terms of the belief he'll have in the players that he sees as being part of his long-term vision for Aberdeen, and perhaps some players that he would have looked at and thought they might not fit in with my strategy or formation or tactics. And they'll give him a little bit of food for thought. And they'll have to continue doing that over the remaining five split fixtures to have a future at Aberdeen. We've talked about before about the constant overhauls in the squad that we've gone through the last three seasons especially. I don't believe that's going to happen again. And some people will be squarish pegs in roundish holes. And they've given themselves with that and the remaining fixtures an opportunity that if Aberdeen is where they want to be, then they've got a chance to show that to the new manager. It is frustrating because in the big games, quite often, these players have shown up and shown that they've got a lot to offer up to Aberdeen. Just haven't been able to show up on a consistent basis. So perhaps Jimmy will look at some of them and think, well, with my style of management, I can get the best out of them on a more consistent basis. And they can show why, in the case of so many of them, we invested so much, one, money, and two, time in them. Because, also the problem with reshaping our squad was the number of them who are on long-term contracts.
Yeah, and I'll talk about it later on. Remind me to talk about the Jimmy Tillian thing a little bit later on. Let's just really quickly, I can kind of wrap up talking about the game on Saturday a little bit more, but I think just it's fair to look at some of the players in particular who put in some really good performance. Special pickout, I think, Stefan Gartman, I thought was his best performance for us yesterday. Probably all in. I thought he was exceptional away in Frankfurt, as I remember. I thought he was brilliant that night. But I think that was probably his best performance for us. And this is one of these ones, again, where I look at it and I go, if you could get that sort of performance out of him week in, week out, I would take him back in a heartbeat. But there's been too many performances this season to the contrary that makes me wary about that.
Pass.
Okay, excellent.
Played well, a great recovering tackle. But no, I've seen too much of Stephen Garber for my likings.
But it's just that thing where you go, there's clearly a level there of performance. And if you could just execute that more frequently, then you'd be in the team. Anyway, Jack McKenzie, I thought he was excellent as well. On the whole, fantastic block it was just touched on in the death of full-time, taking one right in the coupon. Massive shout out to Jack Milne. Came into what was a massive game for that in just his 14th appearance all told for us. 11 minutes to go plus extra time. Didn't put a foot wrong in that period and certainly showed a lot of testicular fortitude to step up first in sudden death in the penalty kicks.
Massive set of great brutes to do that. I think Jack Milne has been a credit to himself this season.
Yeah,
for the way he's come into the team and in difficult circumstances, just, you know, one, being a young player coming into a team that's not performing to the level the fans expect, and to come in as a kid who's growing up playing centre midfield, a clown has come along, had a look at him and say, oh, he's tall, so let's make him a centre back. And then when it comes to actually getting his way into the first team, you know, in a Europa League conference game away from home, to come and play right wing back, which is where he's played the majority of football, I think he's been an absolute credit to himself. And I really look forward to him having maybe more of an extended, perhaps even a pivotal role in the first team next season. I think he's got a lot to offer.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see where they decide to play him. Again, once like someone Tillian gets a look at him and decides, actually, no, I'm not playing in the centre midfield. Like, you put him alongside Dante Povara, for example. There's a lot of running in there. They're both comfortable in the ball. You know, who knows? I don't know. Or maybe he's a centre half and you've got something like Angus McDonald just talking through games and try to really develop him in there. I don't know. Let's see what happens. Dante Povara, once again, showed why I struggle why he's not played as much football this season as he probably has deserved to have played this season. We've ran Graham Shinney into the ground and an underperforming Graham Shinney in the main this season. And we've had a guy on the bench who has consistently, in the main, put in 7 out of 10 performances every time he's played this season.
He's another who I can't understand why he's become such a peripheral figure since, you know, Warnock came in, made him captain, and then, you know, he was the sacrificial lamb against Motherwell, and, you know, Peter Leaven's kind of reintegrated him back into the team, but not to the degree that I think his performances warrant. Such a good player, such a talent, delighted the way it's worked out for him. And he's another one where I'm really excited with Jimmy Tilleen coming in. I'm hopeful that he sees Dante as a big part of the project. I think he'll just continue to grow and grow and grow.
Yeah. Jamie McGrath, excellent once again. Quite possibly my man of the match, I think, on Saturday. Just new deal, please, for the Leinster Lipman, and showed some real leadership as well, I thought, in that extra time period where bodies were dropping like flies all around him. I felt like he really just kind of stepped up. And he is an experienced penalty taker, but, you know, hasn't taken one for us since he's been here. You know, at least put himself forward to go first as well in the shootout. Good penalty, an excellent performance from McGrath. And then Bojan Miowski, I mean, it's hard to find more things to talk about Bojan Miowski, to be fair. It's unfortunate, so unfortunate he had to go off injured. A top performance from a top player at the sharp end of the pitch. And a performance I think that maybe should ensure that any worries that there might be about the fact that his goal scoring form has dropped off a little bit in recent weeks might see like lower transfer fees manifesting themselves. I think that's ill-founded, because I think he's shown in that performance, if nothing else, you know, what an all-round striker he's become in his time at Aberdeen.
Yeah. I mean, he's not putting in that kind of performance as a lone striker when he first comes to Aberdeen. He's just, yeah, we've talked about it at length, ad nauseum. I 100% agree with you. He is unquestionably the best striker in the league, and he'll go on to do big things in the game. I'm convinced of it. I mean, that's what, 25-ish goals for the season, I would say, all in. I know he's had a bit of a drought lately, not been scoring at the same kind of levels, but teams will be looking at it, be pouring through the data, and see that without Bojan Miowski, where Aberdeen would be is not worth thinking about. And even as we've struggled under various managers, he's never, ever come close to jacking it in or throwing the toys out of the pram. Such a talent. And yeah, I mean, potentially we're talking about the countdown is maybe 5 games. So hoping he's can finish the season strong.
Yeah.
Get to 30 goals and, you know, sign off. And we can all just look back and appreciate what a talented striker he was.
Yeah, he's 24 goals for the season as we stand at the moment. He's got 42 in 90 games. So he's just shy of 1 in every 2. And if you think about particularly this season, the lack of chances that fall to Miowski. And even last season, there was periods where we weren't creating an awful lot. You know, there was that, obviously the immortal run in the January of last season where we weren't creating chances either. To have a nearly 1-2 record in this Aberdeen side is frankly nearly phenomenal.
No, and the thing that's always worth remembering as well is that even in that second half when we go on that incredible run, but Duke took over as being the main goal scorer,
yeah,
Miowski was, whether it was directly assisted the goal or his movement being key to Duke scoring, he was making enormous contributions even when he was not scoring. So yeah, I'm sure that'll be taken into account as well. It's just what a player.
Yeah, absolutely. Hard not to feel for Ryan Duncan. I mean, we talked about Duncan and his performance.
I genuinely thought he was going to actually cry.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about his performance when he came off the bench against Dundee. I actually thought Duncan did okay when he came off the bench on Saturday. Like, he didn't do anything wrong. He was fine. Clearly, though, you know, a player solo on confidence. Fair fucks to him stepping up in that opening 5 penalties as well. That's not an easy thing to decide to do. So, you know, you've got to give the kid credit for that. We've already touched on this earlier on, but to then basically be thrown under the bus by Roos in the run-up to it was hard to watch. And I guess we do have to be careful. It might take him a little bit of time to recover from that a little bit. Ultimately, isn't the critical penalty. But
I think Ryan Duncan's, if I'm being blunt, I think his time is coming to an end.
Aberdeen Football Club.
Aberdeen Football Club. And it's a shame the way it's kind of worked out, because I was excited when he first broke into the team. I thought that he had a lot going for him. I just don't think it's necessarily going to work out. And but yeah, you could see his face when he turns away as he sees the ball hit the post and it's bounced away clear. See the hurt and the anguish in his face. I give credit to any player who steps up in a national stadium where you got 40-something thousand Celtic fans wishing nothing but the worst for you to have the balls. And I mean, we're talking a matter of centimeters, inches, you know, inside. It's a perfect penalty. So yeah, credit to him. Just a shame the way it's working out and the way it's probably going to end up for Ryan Duncan at Aberdeen.
I guess finally, Peter Leaven, team setup and approach, first half was bang on, a little too passive for my liking second half, but I think as well part of that was just because that I do think Celtic came out and really kind of forced us backwards, but made the right subs, throwing Sokol up top alongside Miowski, we touched on earlier on, that worked beautifully. You know, two games against Celtic that he's now taking charge of, we've not been beaten by them in those games. And we've looked as threatening against them in both those games as well than I can remember for quite some time. He's done a, I'm not going to say he's done a phenomenal job, but he's, Leaven's done well in coming into very, very difficult circumstances and kind of steadying the ship a little bit and then providing just that little bit of light at what's been a very, 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 very dark tunnel this season.
Yes, well, he's superseded the work of a man who had so much experience and so much know-how in the game as we were presented. And he's come into it, Peter Leaven's come into it with a far more difficult situation than fucking Neil Warnock did, in my humble opinion. And to do what he's done, I'm delighted from the sounds of, from I think, well, it was Alan Burrows, I think might have commented on it, that Peter Leaven will be part of Jimmy Tillien's
coaching setup
next season. I think he's been a really good acquisition for the club. And I think he'll be a big part of the future success of the club under Jimmy Tillien.
That said, right, I'm going to put it, this is my last thought, Jerry Springer's final thought. In all of it, like, we can be proud of the efforts of the team on Saturday, but ultimately we still didn't get the job done. And it's important, I think, that we focus our efforts as a club on how we take that next step. Like, it's all really fine us all being very proud of the effort, but it shouldn't be seen as an achievement, I don't think, by anyone to put in a performance like that. Like, that should be the expectation for me when we go to events like this. It's now surely about how we develop and harness a winning mentality, isn't it?
I believe so.
There we go.
But it's, the key is to retain that belief.
Yeah, I don't want to see people hold this up again as a kind of, like, I've heard it already this season where people at the club are going, oh, we got to cup final. And, oh, you know, we played well in some European games and, oh, we, this will be the next one. We played well at Celtic in the Scottish Cup semi-final. Yeah, we did, but did we win the Scottish Cup?
You were talking about Barry Robson's attitude towards the Rangers game. That comes from the top. And the very fact that our board have been, whether, you know, that's at events or via social media, via statements, been holding up the cup final and group stage football, shows that there is a level that is acceptable in their view. So this is something that I don't think necessarily is going to change under this board. So this is where I think Jimmy Tillien has got a job to do as far as raising the standards and raising the expectations of the club in time, of course. And that's how you go about changing that mentality. And we've got those lessons to be learned here. Of course, you know, once again, individual errors have cost us ultimately in at least one, if not two goals that Celtic have scored. It's just about how you go about getting this, the level of performance that's necessary and to be able to play it out over a 90-minute period. And that's going to be a big ask for anyone. But now at least we have a manager who has a track record of delivering success when his back is up against it. So we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah. Let's, before we move on then quickly, just noticed again that tonight Elfsborg were beaten 2-1 at home by Kalmar this evening. Kalmar were in the relegation zone.
Do we have an out clause in this contract?
It's obviously only four games in, but that's now two defeats on the spin for Elfsborg. I think that makes as well no wins in their last three. If you're an Elfsborg fan right now, this idea about Tillin hanging on until June seems like a really fucking stupid thing to do, doesn't it? Especially if the form of the team is slipping.
It's one thing if you're if Sweden are playing to our schedule and it's just seeing out the season, there's nothing to play for.
Yeah.
But the idea that they're, like you say, that's the start of their season. They've got 1-4 for a team that finished joint top, lost out to the title on goal difference. So this is not the kind of start that you want. It seems very peculiar for everyone involved, the way this has been arranged. But my gut feeling is it's not going to change.
Don't think so?
I don't think so.
I still have my sneaky little feelings that this is going to change. I just don't think it becomes tenable for them to continue to hang on there when they've got, they know who their new manager is. They've got European football to prepare for and not that far off a distance. If you're an Elfsborg fan or if you're even within the Elfsborg setup, you don't want to be in a situation where your league form or your opportunities in the league have gone before the season's even started, really. I don't know. I just don't see it happening. And I think it would be better actually now for everybody all around for him to make the move to Aberdeen so he could also get four games under his belt watching this team. Maybe things will change depending on results this weekend. Anyway, let's move on from that. We'll talk about Loan Watch quickly, I think, shall we?
Yes, please.
Okay, on to Loan Watch. Kieran Gwenya at Partick Thistle on a new sub as Thistle beat Airdrieonians by 4-0 at Firhill in the Championship. Alfie Babbage for Kelty Hearts, not in the squad, as Kelty drew 2-2 with 10-man Falkirk in League One. I suspect that that might be the end of his loan spell with Kelty. They do have an outside chance to play off still with 2 games to go. Finlay Marshall at Edinburgh City, also not in the squad, as Edinburgh City lost 2-1 at home to Annan in League One. Dylan Lobbin, an unused sub, is 4 for Beat East, 5-2 in League 2. Alfie Stewart started and supplied the assist for Peter Pollitt Baby's late equaliser as Peterhead drew 1-1 at Elgin. Adam Reid, Adam Emsley and Kev Hanratty starts for all threes for Martin travel to Banff in the Highland League. Adam Emsley amongst the goals in a 3-0 win over Devon Vale as for Martin wrapped up their Highland League campaign. Finlay Murray at Turriff United started on the bench, came on with 30 minutes to go as Turra rounded off their season with a 1-goal defeat to the Can-Cans. Tom Ritchie at Bucky Thistle, Ritchie with another start. Bucky keeping up their end of things to beat Keith 1-0 at home to secure the Highland League title. Brendan Hamilton at Banksiddy missed out on the final Banksiddy game, which ended in a 1-1 draw at Wick. Jaden Richardson at Colchester United started and lasted 68 minutes as Colchester were beaten by a 0-0 at Notts County in League 2. Colchester still at risk of going down, but they do have a 3-point cushion and 7-goal advantage over Robert Milsom's Sutton United. Anthony Stewart for the MK Dons not in the squad as they won 5-3 at Harrogate Town in League 2. Vicente Bajouin scored again as Emin came from 2-2 to beat 10-man Telstar by 3-2 in the Eerste Divisie on Friday evening. And then Pape Habib-Gay scored and was man of the match as Kristiansund beat Tromso by 1-0 in the Elite Serien. On to the young team, a big 2-1 win for them at Hamilton Accies on Friday evening that followed up a huge 4-1 win over Kilmarnock on Tuesday night. Goals from Fraser Mackey and Ellis Clark sealing the points in Lanarkshire for this one. And then on to the Quines away at Dundee United on Sunday afternoon. What a thriller this one was. United taking the lead through Steedman just 3 minutes before the break, before the Dons rallied superbly in the second half. Ailey Shore with the equaliser on 56 minutes before captain Hannah Stewart put the Quines ahead with a right-footed effort that curled into the top corner before up stepped Bailey Hutcherson with a quick-fire hat-trick to see the Dons take all 3 points with what was a stunning 5-1 victory. They now sit 5 points clear of Millwall at the top of the bottom half of the table. Next up, Montrose visit Pittodrie a week on Tuesday evening. And I think that'll do us for the first half. Join us after the break where we will talk about Motherwell's trip to Pittodrie on Saturday. Looking for the best donuts in the northeast of Scotland? Look no further than Dough & Co. Made fresh every day and topped right in front of you at their 40-seater cafe on Belmont Street in the heart of Aberdeen. They make the perfect gift or the perfect pre-match stop-off with a full selection of bagels and hot and cold drinks. If you're listening from home, Why not place your order for one of their Dole & Co. stops? There are over 28 drop-off locations across the region, delivering through the Northeast on a weekly basis. Follow at Your Donut Shop across socials to stay up to date. Come on, you Reds. Welcome back to the ABZ Football Podcast. Just a quick shout out once again to those of you who make your contributions to the Beer and Coffee Fund. This time to one, Mark Robertson.
To our tribal chief, or is he our MTF now? I'm not really sure.
Maybe he's just our wise man.
I'm happy with that. Yes, the wise man.
Yeah, Mark Robertson. Appreciated it, Mark. Much, much, much appreciated this week again. If you'd like to help keep us fueled in beers or coffees, head over to ko-fi.com/ABZ. Football podcast, the link is in the description. But, Gav, when will this miserable season fucking end?
in roughly 450 minutes time.
Yes, absolutely. 8th versus 9th in the SPFL on Saturday at Pittodrie's Motherwell. Make their second trip north this season. Of course, a thrilling 3-3 draw last time the sides met at Pittodrie as the Neil Warnock debacle kicked into high gear.
Thriller is not what I would call that. I think a calamity of errors.
I think the neutral would describe it as a thriller. It feels like it was so long ago, doesn't it?
Motherwell.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, I was shocked that Shaden Morris got run out against Celtic. I know we had no one else to play, but I mean, it does seem a long time ago, but it also feels like it was just yesterday.
Yeah. This one will be the 141st meeting of the sides on league duty at Pittodrie. Aberdeen with 68 wins. That's a 48% win percentage. 46 draws, 26 wins for the Steelmen in that time. Motherwell coming at this one with the fourth best away record in the league. We have currently the fourth worst home record in the league. So what happens when the unstoppable force meets the immovable object? Well, we'll find out on Saturday. Top scorer for Motherwell is Thelonious Bear, having a hell of a season, to be fair to him. He's got 13 of Motherwell's 46 in the league. That is, again, it's kind of surprising when you look at some of the numbers. 46 scored. It's the third highest tie that anyone in the league has got alongside Hearts. So they're doing all right in front of goal, it's fair to say, Motherwell. But of those 46, 34 from open play against open play expected goals, just 28. So they are massively, massively overperforming the data there. 8 from set plays on an expected goals of 8, which is bang on. So well done. 4 remaining from penalties. They've scored 4 from 6 awarded to them. Defensively, though, they are a bit of a shambles. 51 conceded. That's the joint third worst defence in the league. Only Livingston and Ross County have conceded more. That's right. They've actually conceded more than we have.
Fuck off. No, they haven't.
They have.
No, they haven't.
32 of those conceded from open play, 13 from set plays. That's the worst defensive record from set plays in the division as well. They've conceded 7 penalties. 5 of those have been converted. Pretty direct. Only Killy and Dundee move the ball quicker up the pitch than Motherwell do. Happy to sit in when out of possession. A PPDA of 13.7 is the fourth lowest in the league. So they're more than happy to sit in and allow you to have the ball. Gav, have you gone and confirmed that Motherwell do indeed have the third worst defensive record in the league? I could see you typing furiously.
I mean, it's what the table says, but I still don't believe it.
Well, there we go. Believe it. With St. Johnstone at home, to Hibs, County away at Livingston. It feels like, I can't believe I'm saying this, it feels like it's probably pretty critical that we pick up points here. I mean, it's critical anyway, but I feel that those are opportunities for St. Johnstone and County to pick up points. Grim.
Yeah, I think Hibs are in the same position as Aberdeen as far as just wanting the season to be over with. And I mean, what, County away at Livingston? Livingston are never going to make up the gap they have unless, well, they need to win all 5 games and County to lose all 5 games. So I don't think that's going to happen. A win here, 4 points clear of St. Johnstone, 5 points clear of Ross County. Even if they both win with 4 left to go versus being 1 point ahead of St. Johnstone and 2 points ahead of Ross County if we were to lose, it's definitely, definitely important that we approach this game professionally with an attitude of wanting to obviously, you know, finish the season on a high, impress the new manager. And, you know, the other part of it is that if we win this game, we climb above Motherwell in the league. And then, you know, we put Motherwell perhaps in that position of somehow looking over their shoulder, despite, you know, having a decent enough second half of the season, like you say, fourth best away record, scoring lots of goals. It would put them in a situation where...
Well, if Hibs also failed to pick up points at St. Johnstone, Hibs would be kind of right back into it as well at that point.
Well, I mean, like, we've seen stranger things in our lives than Hibs sleepwalk their way into a relegation playoff situation.
No, that's not strange. We've seen it just happen. That's just a thing.
So we all just want to end the season on a bit of a high. Yeah. And the way to do that is to start by beating Motherwell. It's a good opportunity for us. And if we can do it, St. Johnstone, Ross County, one of them doesn't win, I'm reasonably content that we are that we are safe at that point.
I mean, I do feel we've got quite a bit of work to do to pick the boys up off. Like Saturday would have been a big game. Just there's the physical part to it. I don't know where Miowski, hopefully it wasn't too serious. I think we maybe just took him off more as a precaution than anything else.
Peter even appears to have suggested, I've seen via social media, that he will be okay. Yeah. He'll be available.
Barron just seemed to be cramping, so I don't think there was anything too serious there.
Keldris was cramping.
Keldris was cramping, so maybe it's time for Ross Doohan.
Come at the hour.
But I feel that physically and possibly even more mentally, I guess, the occasion, the highs, the lows, that's an exhaust. I mean, it was exhausting just as a supporter, right? Let alone playing in it. It's kind of going to be important to see how we can kind of pick ourselves up from that. And, you know, Motherwell had a week off again, so... You hope that we can take the positives from the game and the confidence from the way we played to allow us to kick forward, but it's just something we probably need to be mindful about. In terms of like team setup, then what do you want to see? I think Hoylett's almost played himself back in the starting lineup with the way he played, but then at the same time, there's an argument there to suggest that he's maybe better as an impact sub coming off the bench.
I think I would actually like to see perhaps a little bit of a change around, and I'm not sure we've ever seen Duke and Hoylett play at the same time, so I wouldn't mind perhaps having a look at that.
Play McGrath in like the 10 and
play McGrath the 10. You know, Clarkson has had a big game there. Obviously, Shinny. Is Shinny available?
No, Shinny will miss this because he's
Shinny misses that one.
Suspended.
Then, you know, you perhaps get a Phillips in there with Danny Pulvada.
I said that very confidently without having checked, but I'm pretty certain he'll be suspended.
I feel he is, because I was thinking the poll chat was he was going to miss the semi-final already, and then now he misses on the next league game. Yeah. So yeah, you get a Dante Pavada or a Phillips in there with a Barron or a Clarkson. And yeah, be positive. Go on the front foot. Give Motherwell something to think about with a really attacking side full of intent.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I do think that the way we're set up at the moment, we're better just to go and try and win these games rather than try to like manage them. I think I know that's such an obvious thing to say, but defensively we're not solid enough to try and pretend we can get away with like a 1-0, so let's just go and have a fucking go. And this is a shambolic defense you're playing against, so
well, we've seen that plenty. Yeah. And if you know if Devlin's struggling, you know, I think Jackman's showing he's got enough to come in and play a right back. Unfortunately, even though McGarry and Johnny Hayes are there ready to go, I'm not sure I'd be all that keen to see any of them start. Maybe if you wanted to change things, because Jack McKenzie's played a lot of football, like you say, had a massive effort against Celtic. Maybe we could even think about Richard Jensen coming back in and playing at left back like he does for his country. You know, we've got the option now, Rubicic as well. So yep. Yeah, there's options within the squad, in spite of how much we've talked about how the strength of depth isn't there, that if you're leaving and the sports side people look at the team and think these guys, you know, are not going to be able to perform a required standard, there's options that we have to switch things about.
Yeah, no, definitely. Right, come on then. Let's wrap things up. Predictions for Saturday.
Is it going to be another goal fest? I mean, probably. Theo Bear is definitely going to score, just to see the look on Graham's face when he does it. I am going to say 3-2 to the home side.
Yeah, I reckon there's goals here, definitely. Aberdeen 4, Motherwell 1. No, Motherwell 2. Motherwell 2. There'll be a penalty kick and Keldris will go the wrong way for it.
Natch. I'm giving away my Slobber under Rubicic.
No, that's a bit harsh. That's a bit harsh. Right, that'll do us. I think that'll wrap up this week's show. Thank you, Gavin.
Yeah, I just thought I'd maybe just mention on the way on the way out. I was looking just through live score, and I did see that it's Kalmar that beat Elfsborg, and Kalmar are one of the weaker teams in Allsvenskan.
That's what I'm saying. They were in the relegation zone as of today.
First win of the season. But then as I was scrolling, I noticed that Bologna beat Roma 3-1 away from home to go 7 points clear in the Champions League places.
Yep, it's happening.
Swear to God, Lewis Ferguson is going to stick around for Champions League. He's going to sign a contract a la a Dundee United player under Jim McLean.
Never
lifer, get the statue made, and we'll see fuck all for him.
Nah, it'll happen. If Mota goes to Juve, it'll happen. Definitely. Definitely. Anyway, right. Thank you, Gav.
Thank you.
Join us next time on the show where we will take a look back at the visit of Motherwell to Pittodrie, and then we'll look ahead, exciting times, to the visit of St Johnston to Pittodrie. Yay! Look forward to seeing you then. Stand free.
When will it end?
Soon.
This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast was brought to you in association with Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen. Head into the bar, quote the phrase ABZ Pod, that's ABZ Pod, for a £3 pint of Foster's, £4 pint of Moretti, or £5 pint of Fierce any day of the week, including match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round, and the bar is located only 30 seconds walk from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Pittodrie Stadium for free on match days. Come on, you Reds!